Good evening, everyone. This is Shai from Raising the Frequency from Israel. We are on Live 528 platform for live broadcasts and many other cool features. Tonight, we are with Dr. Jane Ruby, and we will speak mostly about what you see on the screen, which is informed consent. So I suggest we... just see a little thingy and we'll start. Thank you. Please share this broadcast. Yes, hi. Thanks for getting back to us. Let's bring Dr. Jane Ruby in. Hi, Jane. How are you doing?
Hello, Shai. So good to be with you.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you as well. Yes, I'm a bit excited because I hope you're going to solve us a little problem we have here in Israel, which is called informed consent. Now, I know it's like a worldwide problem, but let's talk about that. But just before that, if you can tell the audience who are you, a bit about your professional background, how come we see you and Stu Peters quite a lot over the last few months. Who are you, Dr. Jane Ruby?
Yes, well, again, thank you for having me. My name is Dr. Jane Ruby. I live in the United States. I've been to Israel twice. I would have been there last year if the whole COVID thing hadn't happened. But my background is sort of interesting compared to some of the other frontline experts right now. I not only have clinical expertise, I'm licensed and trained as a nurse practitioner. That's a master's degree in nursing. We took our courses in the medical school of the University of Rochester in the state of New York. And I practiced. I took care of patients in acute care settings like ICUs and other areas of the hospital where I was responsible for their care for a number of years. And then I finished my doctorate degree. I have two doctoral degrees. One is in education and the other is in psychology. It's a second one is a PhD. And I went on to study and teach nursing and doctoral research methods. And then I eventually ended up in pharmaceutical drug development. And that's the other, right. I think, interesting piece for me. I spent 20 years up until a few months ago, 20 years in pharma drug development, which means I have a very high level working understanding of the intricacies of developing a drug from an idea to the pharmacy shelf. And that includes understanding complex systems like pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics. In addition to all of that technical and medical background that many medical doctors don't have because they don't focus in that area, I'm also very experienced in the aspects of drug development that require understanding the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA's regulations, their guidance documents, which are it's a nice word for the rules, what they expect. They have heretofore required certain minimal standards to develop these drugs. And there's a process for both preclinical, which is animals in petri dishes, and then the four phases of human subjects research, which we will get into because it does align with your topic of informed consent. In terms of my background, I've written hundreds of informed consent documents, so I'm really excited to share that with you and tell you more about that. And it's not just a matter of writing them. I've had tremendous experience submitting them to ethics boards that are called institutional review boards or human subjects review boards, which is these are ethical boards made up of doctors, lawyers, medical people, average everyday citizens, and they determine whether or not the study is ethical for use and to, you know, with human beings. We'll talk about where that got lost in the current situation. And then you have to rewrite these documents many times to get them to where they are, where this board wants them. And then these boards stamp them. In terms of why I think you're seeing more of me and Stu Peters, and many other people, we're not the only ones that are, you know, carrying this fight, is because of the times we're in, and the people have a great hunger for truthful, direct information that is not censored or blocked by this. We have this sort of this new axis of evil, which is big tech, pharma, and, you know, governments that have been co-opted. And so the media, the mainstream media has become a tool of these evil actors. And so you can't really depend on what they're saying. So I think that that's why our presence is becoming more prominent. I'm just trying to serve, you know, the people and the truth. I didn't really intend to get into anything like this. I spent 10 years in Washington, D.C. up to about a year ago, and I had a political show. By day, I worked in pharma, and I'm highly published in health economics and other areas. I've been on the launch teams that have launched some of the most famous drugs in the world. But I spent 10 years in D.C. The last half was during the Trump administration. It was a very different atmosphere than it was during the Obama atmosphere. And so the long and the short of that is that I had a little show online. It didn't get a lot of attention. It was called Dr. Jane's D.C. And I really kind of, you know, living in that city, you get your ear to the ground. You get involved and connected to a lot of people, including people at the White House. And so I had a lot of interesting background stories. But that's about it for me. I never wanted to be doing this. I'm in Florida now because it's safer politically and in terms of freedom. That's why I left DC last year. And so I really had every intention to just sail off into a tropical sunset, but I guess God had a different plan for me and here I am.
Yes, for all of us. And tell me, what triggered? I mean, how come you woke up, or you know that it's a fake demic? Or I mean, how come you know what you know in from a different angle, like me, like many other people who have woken up to this reality that now pulls the strings?
Well, interestingly, I was I awakened very early, because unfortunately in March of 2020, I was diagnosed with COVID-19 and I was very sick for 6 weeks. But what turned the light on for me very early, and I'm grateful to God that I learned very early that this was an operation, that COVID was a Trojan horse for the vaccine, which is a Trojan horse, in my opinion, for other things and a rapid resetting of world control, was that when my doctor called me, I'm a nurse practitioner. I know how to talk to a doctor. And I said, okay, you know, I have it. Phone in the prescription for hydroxychloroquine. Let's get zithromycin in there to protect my lungs. And, you know, I was talking shop. Yeah. And his response was, and this was a doctor I knew for 5 years. We always worked together on my health, together as partners. And his response was, Jane, you'll have to tough it out. I can't do that. He said, we only prescribe that for patients who are on a ventilator. Well, I know how invasive and dangerous a ventilator is. I said, well, why would you wait until I'm that ill? And that's when it started to hit me. I started to do research. I had nothing else to do while I was sick in bed with the computer. And I found that certain governors in the United States were blocking the access to these life-saving drugs. And I thought, why would they do that? You know, I'm naive at that point. Why would they want to do that? And then it turned out that it was more the Democrat or liberal. It wasn't my choice. It was divided along partisan lines. And it was those governors that were in lockstep to block access. Then some other Republican governors did it, but they turned out to, you know, they're what we call rhinos. They're in name only. And they're really working with the liberal side of things in the United States. But I'm not digressing. I'm just explaining to you how it all got to me so quickly. And I thought, something's wrong here. You don't block life-saving medications and let people, like my doctor said, Jane, go home, just stay home and tough it out. So that led me to research, and I started to do interviews and tell people and warn them. And that's one of the reasons I left the state of Virginia, which encircles Washington, D.C., because I realized that there were a lot of other things happening with that governor just in the emergency state. He was writing, he was signing all these executive orders that were just stripping Virginians of our American rights, right, including watering down our Second Amendment for firearms. So I got out of there around June or July.
Luckily. And thanks again for being with us. I would like to describe the special situation, I would say, about Israel in regard to the experiment and informed consent. And through this description, maybe you can give us a solution and also tell us a bit about what is informed consent, a proper informed consent form, how it should be written, and what is even an experiment. I mean, how do we describe an experiment? Because the situation in Israel, I mean, given that, what's his name, Bourla, from Pfizer, he said that Israel is a laboratory, all right, and other as well express themselves as Israel being a laboratory, or maybe there's an experiment going on. What actually happened in Israel is that the health office in Israel is basically shoving down our throat that there is no experiment in Israel. We learn about it from Bourla, all right? Now, the chairman of the Helsinki Committee, which is in charge of experimentation, all right, in Israel, he said that there is an experiment in Israel. A few days after the health office in Israel said, no, there's no experiment, Bourla came out on his Facebook, Friedman, the chairman of the Helsinki Committee in Israel, he came out on his Facebook page with a video, I think it was, saying there's no experiment. I mean, just a week ago, he said there is an experiment. Now he said there's no experiment. Now, he said it publicly that there's no experiment. What they do say is that they only use medical records, right, from the medical institutions in Israel where people go to the local clinics. I don't know exactly how you call them in English. So they say, the government of Israel is saying they're using only the medical records, all right? Now, the deputy of the legal counselor for health office, she's against giving informed consent forms to vaccinated people, what they are called vaccinated or injected people. She's against giving them these forms because then they admit it's an experiment by giving them such a document. All right. So the professional decision of the health office is that it's not an experiment. And how we tackle it? I mean, given they say it's not an experiment, they're only using the medical records of people. So does it or does it not fall in the definition of an experiment? Maybe it's not. And if it's not, how do I show the court and the people of Israel that we are in an experiment?
It's actually very easy. But let me start at the beginning, because we want to start upstream. First of all, I want people to understand something, and I want you to understand it very clearly. This is not a vaccine. This is not a vaccine by any definition, by any stretch of the imagination. This is a computer-generated chimeric molecule, right? Chimeric is like a Frankenstein, different pieces from different things. It didn't occur naturally in nature. And it was put together based on facsimile strands of protein that were supposedly released from the Wuhan lab. Why am I telling you this? Because these injections are not vaccines. If you call it a vaccine, you've already lost your argument. Whether your argument is to search into informed consent or it's to look at what your rights are, you have to start from the beginning. You call it a vaccine, you've already lost the argument, because a vaccine implies protection, future protection, that your body will respond by creating a protective surveillance system if that organism ever shows up again, and that your T cells have a memory so they know to attack that particular organism. These shots across all companies don't do any of that. Let's lay that foundation first.
All right.
Secondly, the health office, I don't even know if I should say with all due respect, in my personal opinion, the health office and every other official is lying to you, like they're lying to us in the United States, and they're lying to every other citizen in the countries that are compelling this. I don't know if you're aware of this. I personally believe that the state of Israel and the people of Israel were sold out. Somebody made a deal with somebody. And the first rule of racketeering is monopoly. How did anybody ever accept that there would be one company?
Company, yeah.
That alone should have been a major red flag with alarms going off. Now, I don't know the details. I'm not a whistleblower. I don't know what happened inside. But there are lots of discussions and lots of people, other experts, that are bringing forward documentation that show that Pfizer has these contracts with different countries. So that if these countries and their governments don't comply with a certain injection rate or a certain utilization rate of these products, that you will lose your natural resources. You will lose. I don't know what the details are, but that's something for people to look into. Now, why do I know it's an experiment? And this is in plain sight. And the other reason, I want to add one thing. I don't know if people know me personally or my background, but part of the reason I'm so angry about what is happening to the state of Israel is because I'm Jewish and I don't want this happening to the people of Israel. I don't want the women of childbearing age in the state of Israel to lose their fertility. I don't want the genetic, the natural God-given genetic codes in the people of Israel, all over the world, but particularly in Israel, to be modified. Okay, that goes against. Okay, so I just wanted people to understand it's a little bit of where my passion comes, but my passion for this is for all humankind. Okay,
sure,
so
sure.
Let me get to your question. And I want people to take this down. You can write this down. I will send it to Shai also. He can post it somewhere. There is a website called clinicaltrials.gov. In clinical trials, all lowercase, clinical trials, plural, at the S at the end, clinicaltrials.gov, G-O-V. In that, if you, any search box, if you put in the following, N like Nancy, I don't know what else to use, C like cat, T like Tom, N-C-T, right?
N-C-T.
And the number 043-687-28. You will bring up a very lengthy document. It's in a format that is very common for clinicaltrials.gov. It will tell you the start date and the end date. That particular trial number is for the Pfizer product. You will learn a lot in there. You will learn that the trial doesn't end until 2023. But Dr. Jane, what, they're giving it out. I mean, you know, it's not, yeah, because in February of this year, the company admitted in their package insert, and I can tell you how to find that too, that around the point where they had 44,000 people that they had randomized according to their original protocol to 50-50 placebo and treatment, that they had broken the blind, in their words, and they offered those people the shot, and most or all took it. So don't be looking for, oh my God, you know, we'll talk later about why some people have symptoms and why some don't right now or yet, or if they ever will. Now, this is on page 7 of the package insert, which you can download from Pfizer's website, put in prescriber information, package insert, prescriber information, same thing. And it's a PDF. And on page 7 at the top, it explains what they did. Now, Shai, what that means, the reason this is important is because when they unblinded their randomized placebo-controlled trial, which, by the way, is the gold standard or used to be, of the FDA for approval of a drug, that, in other words, the data that comes from that type of a design was almost the only one that they would accept and have accepted for years. But when they broke that blind, they converted their randomized placebo-controlled trial into an open label, because everybody knows what they're getting. That's what an open label means. Mm-hmm. An open label observational trial. Okay. If you also look in that document on clinicaltrials.gov, you will see discussion and you'll see multiple boxes of what we call arms of the study. An arm is a specific dosage or plan. Okay, so there are at least 8 to 10 arms. There might be more. There might be one or two less. I'm not talking in absolutes, but you will see that there are arms for different dosages, 5 micrograms, 10 micrograms, 30. By the way, Comirnaty, the brand name, which the company and the FDA both publicly have stated on their websites, is the same formulation. Those are 30 micrograms, whether you're a child, whether you have liver failure, whether you're elderly, everybody gets, supposedly, that's what Comirnaty was approved for. But so where I was going with that is, so that's what they did there. Now, here's the sleight of hand. Was there an FDA approval? Yes, there is. There are many experts that agree with me because people don't understand pharma drug development. Yes, there was an approval. But the sleight of hand is that they claim they have 2 formulations. They're the same. They're interchangeable. But Comirnaty is the brand name. And they claim Comirnaty is not available in the U.S. So all you have left is this other formulation, same thing, called the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. Right. And that is the one that is still under an emergency use authorization for people that were, I guess, over 16 years old. The problem with that is that under an emergency use authorization, this gets back to informed consent. They can do anything they want. And they have. And they've told you they have. They've come out publicly on their website. They've said in a number of areas, maybe not their actual website, but there have been discussions publicly that they can change the form. They have changed the formulation. The formulation's different. This is how we know. Let's go back to clinicaltrials.gov and NCT 04368728. This is how we know it's in plain sight that the trial doesn't end till 2023, that they, even though they state in the package insert that, well, we can't use all of the reports of vaccine injuries that are reported to VAERS and UDRA Vigilance in Europe and all these other places, because they're self-reporting and they're doctor reporting. But at the same time, they're claiming in this document that they're continuing a study. You cannot continue, you cannot have a study, in my experience, that has not been approved by a human subjects review board. When any of you who have gotten this shot or people you know that have gotten it, when they've gone in, at least in the United States, they get a one page, it's called an information sheet. Mm-hmm. That is not an informed consent. Let me share with you what an informed consent is. It usually is about 25 or 30 pages long. It discloses everything. It tells you how long you're going to be in the study. What are the risks to you physically, mentally? What is the burden that will be placed on you for transportation? What are any potential benefits to you that are known at the time? That you have the right to leave at any time, that you have the right to say no to any chemical or component of the treatment. This takes tons of pages, let me tell you. I've written them. And I've submitted them, and you get them back. If you get them back a couple times, you're lucky. You might get it back a half a dozen times. Tweak this, add that, remove pregnant women. Almost never can you get pregnant women into a study approved by an IRB. And let me go to that just for a moment. One of the reasons I'm adamant that this was approved, or at least part of the formulation, whatever they want to call it, is because we have this package insert. Now, normally this prescriber information I don't know if this happens in Israel, but when you go to a pharmacy store, drugstore, and you buy an over-the-counter medication, you open the box and in there is your jar. And then there's usually this piece of paper wrapped around.
Sure, this leaflet.
Most of us toss it away and we take our aspirin or whatever. Well, for a prescription drug, that's a very, very serious document. Yeah. Every letter, every dot, every number, everything in there has been negotiated between the company and the FDA to be able to be in there. Why? Because that is what we call the label. And the label, you know, you've heard on-label prescribing, off-label. I'll explain that quickly in a minute. The label is the lifeblood of any company because you can only market to what is said in that label. If the label says it's approved for jumping rope, that's the only way you can use it. That the company, mm-hmm. not use it, the company can market it. However, the difference is, and here's where the public was duped again. Doctors, nurse practitioners, physicians, assistants, prescribers don't have that restriction. We can prescribe off-label for an indication, right? An approved indication, other than that for which it was originally approved. Okay? So these governments saying, well, you can't use ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine because it's not approved for COVID-19. Well, yes, I can. I can prescribe it, but the company cannot market it for that. So that was duping number two. The informed consent, you shouldn't take anything. I don't care if it's sugar, unless you have an informed consent. But people were lied to and told they were not in an experiment.
Yeah.
I mean, Bulos, the CEO of Pfizer, said himself, I don't know if they scrubbed it from the internet, but he said it himself that Israel was the Pfizer's Petri dish.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Who gave them permission? Who gave them the right? Who gave your health office the right to waive informed consent? And of all the people in the world, the state of Israel, these informed consents came out of the Nuremberg trial because of the indiscriminate murder of Jews all over the world, and particularly in Germany. How did that get bypassed in the state of Israel? It breaks my heart and it makes me angry.
Well, to say the least, I mean, we as the people of Israel, we at least those who are awake enough,
yes,
to see that this is what's going on, we are really, you know, ashamed of our state and government and the people who runs it.
Don't be ashamed.
We try to find a solution to get rid of these criminals, because what they do, obviously, it's unlawful, illegal. It's a criminal act. And it's against millions of people. And the same goes, obviously, for other places around, yes, the world. And there's obviously worse and a bit better.
Feel guilty, and you cannot. I do not blame the people of Israel, just like I don't blame the people in the United States that took this.
Sure.
They are using tactics that have never before been used, withholding your livelihood, you know, threatening you and your children and your ability to move around your own country. I mean, it's absurd. But I understand how people took this. My mission now, Shai, is to please educate people. Please, yeah, protect the babies and the children. Do not let this get into babies and children. This is an irreversible,
it is,
genetic code system. Now, does that mean it cannot be reversed? Science is, you know, God is great. You know, there are scientific minds out there, I'm sure, that are working on it right now. People need the help. We, you know, there are always going to be breakthroughs. But I want to tell people who haven't, it's important to stress the irreversibility for people who have not yet taken it. And for children, we now have the FDA, which is, by the way, collapsed. Our institutions have collapsed. I'm assuming yours have too. These oversight organizations.
They don't admit it, but obviously they're in the process of collapsing. Yeah, sure.
And they are now the arm of these companies. They are departments within these companies. There isn't anything they're not approving. And so now they have accepted these companies' request to inject babies and children. Five-year-olds are babies to me. Five to 11-year-olds. And these age ranges are known to us in pharma drug development. These are reportable age ranges. So when I see 5 to 11, other than in addition to getting sick to my stomach because it's moving in that direction, I have so many stupid parents. I'm sorry, but when it comes to babies and children, if they don't have that innate desire to protect their kids, I just don't understand it. But the next age, reportable age group under 5 to 11 is 6 months to 4 years. Please, oh, God, no. This has got to be stopped, and it's got to be stopped with children. Look, you don't. Politicians are not going to get you out of this. They got you into it. They got you into it. It's the people. It's the people. You have to band together. You start local. You start to, I don't know how your governmental structures are, but I'm saying in the United States, we have local governments. We have school boards, town boards, And they're all bought and paid for right now. They're funneling millions and millions of dollars, and nobody knows where the money's going. And these people are sitting there with a mask on a high pedestal, and they're laughing at the patient or the parents coming in to fight these mandates and things like that. And we've said, hey, the time is over. Pull your kids out of school, homeschool. You're losing your jobs anyway. You might as well stay home and homeschool. We've got to get through this thing. Once they have no children coming in, they're not going to be able to continue. You got to take back your local government in that way, legally, lawfully. And then when you get that stronghold, you start in your communities, and then you go regionally, and then you go by, you know, we have states. So you go by your, you know, decrementally upward. It's the only way. And you have to start saying no. This Green Pass, you've now learned, I believe you've learned as a country, that fully vaccinated is a movable target. It's a movable goalpost. You will never be fully vaccinated. And by the way, speaking of fully vaccinated and boosters, you can see language in that document on clinicaltrials.gov of not just a third shot, which is the booster right now, but there's a fourth one planned. And I assume that even outside of that protocol that's registered there, that they probably have one every 6 months. And if that, you know, why don't people think, when it first came out 6-8 months ago, they told us that it had a 95% efficacy rate. Well, then 6 months later, why am I asked to take a booster? How does it lose its effectiveness? Oh, well, Dr. Jane, there was a variant. Oh, really? Okay. What's the test for the variant? We don't have one. What are you testing for at all? You're using the PCR test. The United States organization, the CDC, has publicly declared that the PCR test is incapable of determining the difference between the regular flu and the COVID flu. Really? We've been saying that for a year now. Because we know that it doesn't have that validity and reliability to the testing. But the CDC came out with that in June. But people are still getting scared and say, oh, there are lots of new cases in the state of South Carolina or Texas. Really? But the test doesn't work. Your own lying government told you it doesn't work, and that it's going to be replaced in December of this year. That's like telling you, you know, Shy, your cars could blow up. We're doing a recall and the engine could go at any time. But you know what? Just keep driving it till December 31st. And that's when we're going to give you a new car. You would never accept those terms. So why are people people say to me, Dr. Jane, where's the proof? Can you give me like a list? We're giving you all the proof. Force them to defend, force them to substantiate, force them to show you an informed consent.
It's what I say for a long time, not just about the corona, even with 5G before that, and even fluoridation of the water, so many things. I tell people, attack, you know, even if it's legally, attack, let them press their buttons. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I applied to the health office through a lawyer firm, a request for the isolation of the COVID-19 virus, so-called, as well as the Delta variant. Now, I'm still waiting for an answer. And yesterday, the lawyer should send them a reminder, plus another emphasis on a couple of details regarding the isolation system or structure. And I'm waiting for an answer, which I presume they don't have, but let me throw
a little light on that. Please. You're absolutely right. They're never going to be able to tell you or verify for you that it was isolated. And let me clarify something for people. There was something last year. There was a flu. I got sick from it. So we're not saying there wasn't a flu. We're saying that no one has been able to prove and show an isolated, purified, whole SARS-CoV-2 virus from a sick person.
Now, from that's a sick person, exactly. From a sick man or order. Sick woman, yes. Not person. And person is an entity, is a corporation, but from a sick man or woman, yes, it's true.
And the other piece to that is there was a paper published. It's a joke. I'll tell you why in a minute. There was a paper published to validate the PCR, rapid test PCR. Unfortunately, it was peer-reviewed. by two people who were authors on the study. That's unethical, and it's, it makes it garbage. Yeah. These two gentlemen, Victor Korman and Christian Drosten, are very much involved in making billions of dollars in producing PCR test kits. So there's a huge conflict of interest. But right. In the paper shy, you know, Dr. David Martin always says, listen to the words of the criminals themselves. They will tell you what they're doing. In the paper, they claim they validated that the PCR test works as a diagnostic tool. But when you read their methodology, they admit that they validated it against a facsimile. Watch this very carefully, everyone. A facsimile of a portion of a protein sequence that was supposedly a replica. You hear all those words, facsimile, replica, a portion of the SARS-CoV-2 virus that no one's ever isolated.
Yeah.
So why are you still accepting rates and cases, okay, of COVID-19 infections based on a PCR test? You all should be stepping back and saying, nope, until you show us a validated study that is replicated by other credible scientists that have replicated the validation and the reliability studies, we're not going to take any of that, right? Why would governments block access to life-saving treatments if this was about your health?
Sure. Fair questions. Thank you for that. I want to go for a moment back to the experiment thing. People do not know enough what is considered to be an experiment, what is defined or what's the definition to an experiment in people. And if I go even to the Nuremberg Code that was established in order to make sure that no experiment without consent should ever happen again, still people seem to forget what is an experiment. And I want to emphasize it because now for the people of Israel, who really a lot of our families have taken these jabs, we full trust in the government and in the process. And yes, they can accept that there's some corruption, but there is a pandemic and they try to protect us from it. And this is the way forward, etc. And they did accept it without the knowledge of them being a part, the guinea pigs, just a part of an experiment. And if you can just, I would say, re-talk about the experiment part plus the informed consent that, because people of Israel should know that they are a part of an experiment and there's no informed consent process at all happening. And the government is actually detaching itself from the fact that there is an experiment saying we only use your medical records. I mean, it just...
What are they using the medical records for? You've mentioned that a couple of times. And what are they using the medical records for? How does that relate to informed consent?
I think... No, they say because it's not an experiment, we only use the medical records, therefore we don't need to provide you informed consent because it's not an experiment. We only use the medical records. When actually they share them with Pfizer, as far as I understand, all right? I mean, they share the information.
Yeah, okay, so there really are two different things here. There's good clinical practices of what an experiment should be, and I'm not sure that's helpful because that's not what's the way they're conducting it. In other words, they're conducting this experiment. This is a worldwide experiment. They're conducting it in a way that deviates from good clinical practices. So if I share with you, and anybody could look up good clinical practices, that's a known, you know, standard, GCP. Mm-hmm. If anybody looks them up, you can see what should be done, like including a very extensive informed consent that we as researchers are obligated, by the way, there's a lot that goes with informed consent, not just having it, all those pages, but there's an obligation of the research team to review it in detail with the prospective subject, and that subject has to sign a statement. It's been explained to me. I'm accepting the risks and the benefits. Here it is, Jane Ruby, I sign, okay? None of that has happened, right? But you're getting the wool pulled over your eyes. By the way, normally in StreamYard, I love to see the comments because if I see something that is wrong or that I need to correct.
I know, but it's in Hebrew. I have a lot of comments in Hebrew.
I know, it's okay. It's their show. I can't answer anything. So I apologize. I'm sorry. Anyway.
Sure.
So back to the experiment part. They're basically lying to you and telling you you're not in an experiment. Why? Because you would demand all these things if they officially said you were in an experiment. You have the Pfizer CEO saying publicly to the people of the world, Israel is a petri dish, right? Thank you. I love you too. Israel is a petri dish. That's an experiment. A petri dish is an experiment. Hello. Yeah. So yeah. I'm saying to you, you're just because you don't get the official word, it is an experiment because they haven't finished their own trials. So everything they do under an emergency use authorization is an experiment. So there's that piece of it. I don't want to get away from. Now you say like people take it on, the authority or they trust the government that there's a pandemic going on. If you really step back and inform yourself, there is no a pandemic. I'm not sure there ever was, because the numbers we got out of the Johns Hopkins tracker that I'm sure people watched all over the world last year, you have to remember that entire tracker and that entire system is 100% funded by Bill Gates and his foundation.
Yeah.
Number one. Okay. Number two, even if there was a pandemic and you just allow those numbers, look at the definition. It's an overwhelming, this is what a pandemic is. I'm going to paraphrase it. An overwhelming number of infections that overwhelms the majority of a country and then the majority of all the countries in the world. We don't have that.
No.
We haven't had that since last year. So you are not in the middle of a pandemic. You've been the victims, as many people here. I'm not saying Israel is any different than the people of the United States or Canada or whatever. We have all been, as a collective group, we have all been lied to. We've been told there's a pandemic. We've been the victims of a psychological operation. Once you get that first fear thing in there, I was a victim of it last year. We didn't know what this was. We had never had this happen. Ooh, we looked around. I walked to the, three blocks to my grocery store and back. That's all I did in February and March of 2020 or 2020 rather. And because we didn't know. So we didn't know there was something new in the world. And so, so that fear, that constant, that did tremendous damage to the psyche of the world. Now they don't have to give you that much fear. They just have to drop a little drop. We got the booster and, there's another variant behind this variant and that other variant. And, variant's a nice new fancy word. We used to call it mutation. And by the way, in real antigens and viruses and organisms, when they plow their way through a human population or even an animal population, they burn down. They don't burn up into something else. You have to tweak them. You have to create a gain of function change on them to make them more dangerous, because viruses burn down, right? So your numbers went down initially because coincidentally, they've got this timed. Coincidentally, the virus was burning down, right, through many countries. But then you got inoculated, you got your second shot, right? And then the numbers went up again. And now with the boosters, your numbers of illnesses are going up again.
Up again, yeah.
How can anybody continue to buy the story when the numbers go up with injections? And the reason they're going up with injections is because your immune system is being damaged. It's being primed to overreact. And some experts have predicted that antibody-dependent enhancement, this priming, it's called pathogenic priming. You can look it up. And I want you to not take everything. I want you to start to learn not to take everything for what somebody says. Double check my information. But pathogenic priming, they have predicted that when people, either this winter or next spring, when natural flu viruses, come through, that people are going to react like the animals did in the preclinical studies for SARS-CoV-1. Hmm. And the reason these companies were allowed to skip the preclinical animal studies for SARS-CoV-2. And that is because when they were exposed to the flu in the wild, the natural, their immune systems had been so damaged and the inflammatory, you know, residual processes damage that they couldn't fight the natural flu. And there's a prediction that there'll be a lot of illness and death. Now, I don't want to leave people feeling helpless. There's a lot that some of the experts say you can do. I don't see logically how you can reverse a genetic code if it is integrated in with your own, but I'm not a scientist in that area. And I pray to God somebody's working on that because that's the upstream chain, you know, food at the top of the process, food chain. But I do think in the meantime, we've been given by God an incredible, incredible being, our bodies. And so we need to do everything we can, whether we've taken the shots or not. If you've taken one shot, don't take another. If you've taken both, don't take a booster. And start to, you know, focus on what you can control, which is to get your body in the most healthy shape it can, because the body is miraculous and it can probably stave off and keep you healthy and maybe get you over those maybe exposures, you know, from the natural wild until somebody finds a reversal to decode or reverse the code. This is what I'm praying for. So what does that mean? It's good, healthy, organic food, whenever you can get it. Good, clean water. Get away from the processed food. Get away from the cities, you know, the concentrations. Supplements, there are better experts than me. I follow them. Dr. Zandre Batha in South Africa is a naturopathic doctor, and she takes care of a ton of patients that have gotten the shots with a lot of good results. And so she's got a lot of great recommendations. I recommend her site. Also Dr. Zev Zelenko, if you're all familiar with Dr. Zelenko.
Sure.
And I ask people to pray for him because he's done so much to try to save lives.
True.
And he's battling a very severe form of cancer right now. I believe he's out of the country getting lots of different treatments for it. So, you know, let's pray to Hashem that Dr. Zelenko is spared. Because he has done so much for humanity. If anybody deserves a break right now, we need him. We need him in this fight. So, Absolutely. So people like that have, you know, on their websites have great protocols with some very powerful antioxidants. And the connection to that is that the antioxidants repair and reverse a lot of the damage that these, you know, these spike proteins are doing, that some of the chemical things that are we're finding inside of these random vials that they're causing, you know, oxidative stress, but that these supplements can provide some protective and some reversal of this oxidative stress. I'm sorry to go on and on, but there's so much information I want you to have.
So I know. I want to maybe one quick question about the children, because there's some reports already started to happen in Israel to be published about children who suffer from multi-inflammatory syndrome in children, all right? I mean, you know about
it.
It's the MISC. And I mean, we know it's coming from the injections, and still the children who were reported to have it, they have not taken the injections. That's why we can assume maybe help us with that they've got something from their parents who got injected, whether through shedding or some other process. And I'm just thinking more and more reports will come about children who suffer from, they call it post-corona syndrome, but actually it's the multi-inflammatory syndrome in children, which we know that is caused by the injection. So I'm just thinking what we can do with these children who have not been vaccinated, but somehow not vaccinated, but injected, and somehow got sick.
Well, I have a couple of theories sort of about that, and I will get to the shedding. I want to share, you know, Please. Some enlightenment on that. There's not a lot, but don't expect a lot, but it's very slow going. But let me just talk about the theory. The theory goes for all the unjabbed, not just children who are with parents that got it and all that. Mm-hmm. There is something that we know is transmitted. The company admitted it in their documents. There's the protocol for the investigators brochure It is, I believe it is C459-1001. If you put that into a search engine, you'll get the Pfizer protocol. The title is phases 1, 2, 3, which means they're doing the phases simultaneously, which is the most dangerous thing you can do. But I could talk about that another time. The reason I want to bring that up is in that document, they warn investigators at the beginning that if they use an example, if a husband has gotten the treatment, they call it, the injection, and the wife is either pregnant or of childbearing age, that if she is exposed to it, now they don't say what, and they don't say, they do say how. They say that most likely through, and you can find it in this document, through inhalation, their word, not mine, and skin to skin, right? Okay. We don't know, but before everybody jumps, we don't know what it is. Everybody says, oh, it's a spike protein. You're making, if you got the injection, you're making billions of them. And that's supposedly what's happening. But we don't know if it's the spike. Maybe it's something else that we haven't learned. Remember, we know a lot about what's in these things, but we don't know everything. Only the company knows everything. True.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So that's the shedding thing. People say to me, what do I do? Can I sleep with my husband? I mean, can I... And it's the honest question, or the honest answer rather, Shai. I don't know. I will tell you when I don't know. I'm not going to tell you, well, you can do this and that. Dr. Jane doesn't do that. So you can get other answers, but get them verified. So that's the shedding.
So we're talking about either inhalation, according to the words, inhalation and skin to skin.
According to Pfizer's document.
Right. All right.
They say if the woman of childbearing age or whatever is exposed, meaning to the husband, I don't know if this is how they word it, that it is reportable. It is the researcher's obligation, if it comes to his or her attention, to report it. So it's reportable, but I can stick this into pregnant women everywhere in the world. Come on. Something's off here. And by the way, when you look at the protocol in clinicaltrials.gov, you'll see exclusion criteria, which is a common section in the protocol. Yeah, well, guess what's in there? Pregnant women, people with medical comorbidities like kidney disease. You know, and that's good. That should be excluded, right? Babies, this one, someone who's had COVID. But guess what? That exclusion list should translate, once the drug is approved into the package insert, into the contraindication list, which means do not give to those populations. Why? Because they weren't studied.
Right.
You have an unfinished trial. Do not take something that's not. One other thought I want to leave before we close up. This thing about children or people getting symptoms by being with family members or other people. How do you know that they haven't been putting this technology in the last couple of years? You think they just started this?
Exactly.
Maybe they're using these materials. And so people have said to me, Dr. Jane, look at my blood under the microscope. I never had the shot. And my blood has those stacking red blood cells and some of those pieces like graphene. I'm thinking to myself, all this can't be jumping from one person to another. Yeah. And I'm thinking, what makes you think they were benevolent up to 2 years ago or a year ago, and then they started this? Maybe not. It's just a theory.
But it makes sense. Knowing their way of work, it makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, it makes a lot of sense. I know how they work, and it's at least 5 years, if not more, they've been putting this in various sources. I mean, whether it's food, water, air, whatever.
So you know what I tell my family and friends, Shai? I say, for now, I wouldn't trust anything coming out of these companies, and I would put a 100% moratorium on all vaccines, right? All vaccines, seasonal flu. We have many cases in the United States where people were told after they went in for their seasonal flu shot, oh, I'm sorry. Here's your COVID card. Why are you giving me a COVID card? Because you got that one instead. And the companies have said they're going to start integrating the mRNA technology in every vaccine.
If
they're pushing to get this in everybody's body, why wouldn't they put it in the other vaccines?
Sure. I mean, to be honest, Jane, I was, I don't know, in the last 10 years or so, maybe more, I go against these injections altogether. Doesn't matter which time.
Yes.
And even today, more so, I tell people, not just that, do not take the PCR up your body somehow. Do not put these blue masks. I mean, everything they prepared for us to examine, to protect, to whatever, it's all, it has something. At least suspect it and use, if you want to put a mask, put just a cloth, you know. Don't use their stuff because probably it's laced with something evil or
correct.
Or something like that.
I mean, this is a legitimate fear. It's a legitimate suspicion. So stop everything right now. I mean, you know, here's the point to the people of Israel. You have the power. It's just that it's collective. You don't have it as an individual person anymore. We don't have it here in the United States anymore.
Yeah.
But we have it collectively. And I can tell you, I'm going to leave you with this hope, because there are, I'm very involved in the airlines. A lot of whistleblowers come to me and Stu. We have a lot of information about what's going on.
Yeah.
When people band together, like certain departments, operations at one airline, 200 people said, you can take that shot and stick it, and you're not sticking it in us. And they walked off the job. 2 weeks later, they were called back because they couldn't function without them. And they said, okay, we'll wait 6 months. So you don't underestimate your ability as a group to control this thing and to protect yourselves as a group.
You know, it's like we say, each one is a little light and together we are strong light. I'm saying,
yes.
I'm saying each one has to show a bit of bravery, just a bit, and it will just blow wind in all of us, you know, to show each, for each and every one of us to show a bit of bravery, and then we can beat it like really, really quick. Dr. Jane Ruby, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And if you have anything to add or you need to send me a document, please do. And I hope to see you in the near future. And I wish to you and your family good health and prosperity. Thank you very much for everything, you do in general, and for this show. God bless.
Thank you so much for having me, Shai, and to everybody on the chat. That was very sweet. A lot of you started to write in English after I said that. It's very kind of you. So I love you all too, and thank you again for having me. Just be strong. Know that God is on our side, but you know, he also gave us a brain, so we've got to use it and say no and start protecting each other. So shalom.
Excellent. Shalom. Kol tov. Thank you very much.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.